Florida's West Coast is bracing for impact.
Milton's still a very extremely dangerous hurricane.
It's another example of how climate change is leading to more deadly and destructive weather events.
This is all pretty sobering stuff, I'm afraid.
Today is Tuesday, October 8th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
You're going to see large areas covered with deep water from the Gulf of Mexico pushing inland. Structural damage to building, especially from destructive wave action, with some buildings being totally washed away.
Just 2 weeks after Hurricane Helene ravaged the southeastern United States, killing more than 200 people, splitting roadways in half and leaving towns unrecognizable, another monster storm is now approaching the Florida coastline. Michael Brennan is the director of the National Hurricane Center.
We are expecting 10 to 15 feet of inundation above ground level somewhere in this area, and that includes the Tampa Bay region. So this is a potential for life-threatening, destructive storm surge that could affect much of the west coast of Florida.
Mass evacuations are underway for people in the storm's path, many who were still cleaning up from the last storm. AP reporter Kate Payne is in Florida.
Just days ago, residents here have hauled out tons of waterlogged mattresses, furniture, drywall, and piled it on the streets in the hopes of salvaging their homes, some of which took on more than a foot of water from Hurricane Helene. Residents here are concerned that all of this trash could become missiles if hurricane force winds sweep through this community again with Hurricane Milton. Here in Clearwater Beach, Florida, I'm Kate Payne.
And Scott, it's serious enough that President Joe Biden has canceled a planned overseas trip to Germany and Africa.
I just don't think I can be out of the country at this time.
And while we're focused on what's happening here in the United States with this storm and the last storm, scientists say nowhere on Earth will be unaffected by climate change. At the United Nations last month, Secretary General Antonio Guterres sounded the alarm.
Our world is in dangerous waters. Scientists tell us that the global sea level is now rising faster than at any time in the last 3,000 years and accelerating. The rate of increase has more than doubled since the 1990s.
The UN says close to 1 billion people living in low-lying coastal zones will be directly affected by rising sea levels and other climate changes.
You know, Lori, It's hard to convey the seriousness of what's happening to the planet. You know, we talk about pre-industrial temperatures and carbon footprints. It sort of dries up the conversation. It makes it sound like a science lecture in school rather than a warning that life as we know it is changing around us. But listen to this. A weather forecaster on Channel 6, television Channel 6, in Miami, Florida, was on the air, telling his viewers about how fast Hurricane Milton had strengthened. And he chokes up. He almost breaks down in tears.
Just an incredible, incredible, incredible hurricane. It has dropped 50 millibars in 10 hours. I apologize. This is just horrific.
That really impacted me when I watched it, and apparently it's gone viral on social media, Scott. My first thought is this is a meteorologist talking about the weather and he's choking up. Why? Why is he choking up? Why is this so disturbing to him?
I know. It's surprising at first, and then you watch it again and again. I've watched it over and over again, because it's a real emotion. He's really distraught about how powerful this storm is, how quickly it became so powerful.
Right. I mean, you know, these guys are used to reporting weather and serious weather events, you know, whether it's a storm or an earthquake. But rarely could I can't ever remember watching one of these guys on TV literally almost breaking down into tears. And that really just, it's sort of, I was taken aback by it. But now, you know, again, he's talking about millibars, which doesn't right. really help most of us understand or comprehend just how serious that is, or climate change is. But we do have some help. Joining us now is Michael Wehner, a senior scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory.
Thanks so much for joining us, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
So can you explain to us why he was so emotional?
Well, you know, when you're studying this kind of event, these intense hurricanes, it's easy to get wrapped up in the technical details and the beauty of meteorology itself. But, you know, at the end of the day, real people are impacted, they're suffering, and in some cases dying because of these beautiful storms. And, you know, it can get to you after a while. You know, I have friends who are impacted by both Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton. My friend is evacuating from Milton today and this morning, and doesn't believe her house will be there when she gets back. And so, you know, that kind of human tragedy is heart-wrenching, and especially when it happens to people you know. And if, you know, this particular meteorologist is local, I'm sure he knows people that have suffered or in past hurricanes and will suffer in this one.
So what was it that he was seeing talking about this hurricane nearing the mathematical limit? What was he seeing that was so alarming to him on a human level?
What he was seeing was something we call rapid intensification. And rapid intensification is what generally happens when a storm becomes a category 5 or category 4 even, where all of a sudden the pressure drops by a lot. The formal definition is 35 millibars in 24 hours. This storm dropped by a lot more than that. So very intense rapid intensification. And he knew that meant that this storm was going to be intense and damaging and probably deadly. One of the things that we do know about rapid intensification is it requires very warm water underneath. The warm water, the hot water in the Gulf of Mexico in this case, is the source of energy for the storm, and that there are record temperatures occurring across the planet, but especially in the Gulf of Mexico, because of climate change. We have a paper that actually looked at this very issue of rapid intensification due to climate change, and we find that the situations where this phenomena can occur is increased because of climate change, especially near the coast. And so that's of great concern.
I know you took a look specifically at the storm that just preceded this hurricane, Helene, and at one point in time you applied the calculation to how much rain fell inland in areas that normally don't get that intense a storm, right?
Indeed. And, you know, the hazards from a large tropical cyclone, a large hurricane, are multifold. You know, the wind is what the Saffir-Simpson scale and what you hear about, you know, categories 4 and 5, is what determines that number. But most of the damage from a large storm actually is from flooding. And along the coast, it can be saltwater flooding from the storm surge. And in inland, it's freshwater flooding from the copious amounts of rainfall. And it's that latter damage impact that we have we understand well, and we've written about a lot, and that's what we studied for Hurricane Helene.
What can you say about what we're seeing now in comparison to past hurricanes that you've looked at?
Well, there are two things that I can say with high confidence. One is that the risk of a major hurricane has been increased because of climate change. The second is that, especially for the large hurricanes, the amount of rainfall that falls has been increased dramatically because of climate change. And we understand that pretty well. We know from 19th century steam engine technology that the fully saturated air, which is the situation during a big storm, can the moisture that's in that fully saturated air increases at about 7% per degree centigrade warming. But what we find in these studies is that the rainfall increases at a much greater rate, usually 2 to 3, or even this in the lean, even higher than that, times that 7% per degree. You know, so we find results more like 20 or 30% increases in rainfall, which is really substantial. And the reason for that is that not only is there increased available moisture, but there's increased energy because everything is warmer. And that increased energy, available energy, means that the winds are a little bit stronger. And a little bit increase in the winds, in the horizontal winds, increases the vertical motion, the updraft, they call it, in the storm. And so the storm is more violent, and this more violent storm is more efficient at raining out this available moisture. So you sort of have a double whammy. You've got more moisture and increased efficiency. And so it leads to these rather large rainfall amounts. And that actually goes down the chain. The only storm we've really gone down the whole chain of events is Hurricane Harvey. And if you permit me to tell this story, Harvey was a storm that stalled over the coast of Texas and produced copious amounts of rainfall over the greater Houston area. And so there was about a degree centigrade of warming over the Gulf of Mexico. And that led to a 20% increase in the rainfall from the storm, which led to about a 14% increase in the flooded area. But that led to a 32% increase in the number of flooded homes. And so NOAA estimates that the total cost of Hurricane Harvey was $155 billion. And so most of that is structures and homes, structures and cars and things. And so it's fair to say that climate change caused one-third of that damage, or about $50 billion.
Globally, right, if you apply this same foundational principle around the world, we're going to see these kind of weather events, no matter where you are, become worse and worse because we're still warming the planet, no?
Well, indeed, and we're already seeing that. We have another paper, Jim Costin, who's a former NOAA scientist, and myself, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, proposing a hypothetical Category 6 extension of the Saffir-Simpson scale. And Hurricane Milton did not quite reach our threshold of 192 miles an hour, although it came close. But there have been five storms in the last decade that have reached that threshold, and none before that in the historical record.
That is frightening.
We thought so.
Michael, thanks so much for the time and the insight.
Thank you very much.
Michael Wehner is a senior scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory.
You know, Lori, as scary as this is, like you said, oil and gas exploration is still moving forward. Just today, in Cape Town, South Africa, Africa Oil Week began, and the South African Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy said this:
"We appeal to delegates at this conference and the investment community to continue investing in developing oil and gas to enable a prosperous energy outlook for Africa and promote sustainable development."
Yeah, so while we talk about climate change and the causes of climate change, it's difficult to stop that train.
The greenhouse gas emissions are definitely moving in the wrong direction from what we're hearing. And it's a problem. While all the experts and a lot of politicians are sounding the alarm, like Secretary General Guterres at the UN.
"The cause is clear. Greenhouse gases, overwhelmingly from burning fossil fuels, are hitting our planet expanding seawater and melting ice.
All right, well, let's dig deeper. Joining us now is Kim Cobb, the director of the Institute at Brown for Environment and Society at Brown University. Thank you so much for being with us. I know your research includes climate, observations of past and present climate, our understanding of the future climate change impacts. You know, parts of the U.S. East Coast are just now starting to pick up the pieces and recover from this last hurricane, which caused massive widespread destruction. And now parts of the East Coast, especially Florida, are bracing for this monster hurricane, Milton. It sounds like it's going to have disastrous impacts. What can you say about what we're witnessing?
Well, it's something out of a horror show, isn't it? I mean, you know, the nation is still all eyes on the southeastern U.S. already that, you know, is taking hundreds of people's lives, livelihoods. This is a generational impact that is unfolding before us in real time. And then, of course, we have the prospect for another devastating series of impacts over the next couple days across Florida. You know, this is the kind of 1-2 punch that becomes possible with climate change when we have supercharged ocean temperatures right now, which are still as warm as peak summer temperatures in the past decade, and we're well into fall. So that is the fuel that's driving these twin beasts that the United States is staring down right now. And unfortunately, you know, we know that with each increment of additional warming that's going to occur over the next decade or two, we expect these kinds of storms to become more frequent with those warmer ocean waters and, of course, warmer atmosphere as well.
You know, this one is expected to remain a hurricane as it crosses across the peninsula. Now, it's not the first time this has happened. It happened in the last year or two. But I grew up in Florida, covered hurricanes as a reporter, as a career. I don't ever remember this in the past where it maintained hurricane strength as it crossed the Florida peninsula.
Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is that these storms are stronger than they were in past decades. And, you know, it really challenges our imagination. We grow up with an understanding of what hurricanes can do and what they can't do. And now we're about to see record-breaking event cross Florida, and we just witnessed a record-breaking event in southern Appalachia, in a very different region of the world, far inland, of course, from what many consider to be the most devastating impacts. And so it's just important to remind people that these events are far outside our collective memory. And that's challenging to kind of prepare for. It's challenging to internalize what it means for evacuation plans and people's psychology of the need to evacuate, which just hasn't caught up with our climate reality right now. And it's even more challenging when we look ahead to the coming ocean temperatures that are going to fuel these kinds of storms more and more frequently. What does it mean for our infrastructure? What does it mean for coastal insurance property values? What does it mean for people who are looking to build their home over the next generation or so down in Florida and other regions of the southeastern United States on the coast? These are questions that we're not really ready to answer. And unfortunately, we're being reminded that we are behind the curve when it comes to fully internalizing the climate statistics of the present moment, let alone those that are coming down the pike over the next decade or two of continued warming.
Can you explain a bit to the non-scientists here, like us, the scientific reason why, as the planet warms and the oceans warm, these storms continue to intensify so much and so much faster?
Yeah, so the rapid intensification that we're seeing with both Helene and Milton and many other hurricanes in the recent past, this has become a household phrase at this point in our climate change reality, really is a fingerprint of those warmer ocean temperatures. And that means that what once upon a time might have been a tropical storm or category one storm is now being supercharged to a category four, category five in a very short amount of time. So the fundamental fuel for a hurricane like this comes from the surface ocean, and specifically the temperature of that upper ocean. And when we have the kind of temperatures that we have across the Gulf right now, which are directly related to fossil fuel emissions that are warming the surface ocean, not just this year, but this has been decades in the making. This has been a slow and steady march of tropical ocean temperatures that have been going in one direction for over 50 years right now. And so that is really the fundamental fuel that's driving these monster storms. And that's why we are so confident in saying that going forward, we can expect more such stronger storms, Category 4s, Category 5s, taking up a larger share of a season's hurricanes than in decades past.
So regardless of what we do in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we really need to address, as you said earlier, the infrastructure of the way we build, where we build, instead of building in floodplains, instead of building on the coast and such. We need to rethink all of that, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I think two things with respect to the future here. One is to remember that while warming, continued warming is baked into the next 20 years or so, maybe even 30, we can begin to stabilize temperature change after that time frame, and we can level off temperatures on that kind of time frame if we really dramatically work to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the next 5 years. The next 10 years are super critical. So let's not give that away, because that's what we're fighting for right now with our emissions trajectories, is to keep damages and losses to a bare minimum this century. And that can happen sooner than you think. That's point one. Point two is, what does it mean for our decision-making around coastal infrastructure, insurance premiums, and essentially this must drive to policy on two levels. One is thinking about, what does it take to build climate-resilient policies into place? This will be thinking about market-based mechanisms like insurance premiums and things like that, but also thinking about building codes and, you know, floodplain definitions and how we're internalizing that risk as well. But the second part of our resilient future is to harness the available knowledge and frankly lived experience that we're now going through to make sure that we have really cutting edge, excellent emergency planning and response procedures in place, and the appropriate proactive approach to that when we come into a hurricane season, that communities are well prepared, the most vulnerable are protected, and that communities have a way to come back from these events without the kind of crippling generational losses that we're currently facing. So there's a lot to dig into there, but it starts with harnessing all the available science that we do have about the links between climate change and these monster storms. And of course, recognizing that we have to leverage all instruments of policy at the local, state, and federal levels on resilience, which is a critical part of climate action.
Kim Cobb, Director of the Institute at Brown University for Environment and Society, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Okay, it's been a pleasure.
This has been The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue and on our website at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.